court appointed, is that correct? Appreciate your taking the assignment and the good work you did for your client. We'll move to the next case of the morning, which is the United States versus Andrew Chavis. Mr. Morrell.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Mark Merrill, and I represent the defendant appellant Andrew Chavis on this matter. I'm a recently graduated third-year law student arguing under Illinois Supreme Court Rule 711. There are three main issues raised by this appeal. The first deal with the evidentiary issues, the second deal with jury instruction issues, and the third deal with sentencing issues. Both we and the government agree that the sentencing issue should be governed by this court's order in Palladino, and thus I will not be discussing the sentencing issues unless this court has questions concerning its relation to this case. I'd like to focus first on the evidentiary matters raised by this appeal, focusing on the admittance of Mr. Chavis' other acts evidence, specifically his 1997 drug conviction and evidence from his April 2003 arrest. This evidence was admitted in the trial court under Rule 404B to show his intent or his absence of mistake or accident with regard to the charged crime. However, because this evidence was ultimately admitted to show Mr. Chavis's propensity to commit the alleged crime, and in the alternative, because this evidence's probative value was substantially outweighed by its prejudicial effect, it should not have been admitted. Furthermore, the admittance of this evidence tainted the proceedings and ensured that Mr. Chavis did not receive a fair trial. The facts of this case are almost completely analogous to those in this court's recent decision in United States v. Jones, where this court held that the defendant's previous conviction for distributing drugs could not be used in his current case against him. As the court noted in Jones, there must be something more about the previous conviction that sheds light on his purpose, his plan, or volition to commit the crime. In this case, that something more was simply not present. Now, the cases cited by the government clearly fall within Jones and the hypotheticals espoused by Jones, but this case clearly does not. In fact, the only link, as it was in Jones, to the previous conviction is that Mr. Chavis intended to distribute drugs on this occasion because he had in the past distributed drugs. But as the court noted in Jones, that is nothing more than a propensity argument, and thus it violates Rule 404B. Additionally, this evidence was improperly admitted to show mistake or accident. As noted by defense counsel in closing argument, mistake was simply not an issue in this case. If mistake is allowed to come in this type of situation, then it will come in all situations where defendants like Mr. Chavis plead not guilty. In essence, what the government argues is that that the only mistake was that Mr. Chavis was not guilty. So the argument goes that his prior conviction shows that it couldn't have been a mistake because he had done this in the past. Again, that is simply a disguised propensity argument, and it goes to the very heart of Rule 404B, which says that the jury, that the government cannot use conduct, cannot use the defendant's prior conduct to show that he committed the crime in the past. Furthermore, this evidence violates the very warnings of this court's ruling in Beasley that one drug offense would be used to prove any other drug offense, and that is what we hope to show this court was the purpose here.
What is the offense that he simply wasn't involved in drug transaction?
That was his defense, yes, sir. His defense was that from the entire time he was arrested, that these drugs belonged to Mr. Jefferson, that they were his the entire time, and that he never possessed these drugs.
And he, to what extent is the evidence of this encounter in the car? Who testified to that? Jefferson?
Jefferson testified to that. My client did not testify. Jefferson was the principal, and in fact, one of the few witnesses with direct testimony that implicated my client. And the testimony was that these drugs were Mr. Jefferson's when he got in his car. My client's fingerprints are not on the drugs. When he was arrested, the drugs were not found in his possession. They were found within Mr. Jefferson's control or on his body.
Who said that?
That's the facts, that his fingerprints weren't on the drugs and that the drugs were found on Mr. Jefferson or within his control. They weren't found on my client. He never, as U.S. v. Puckett, which came after Jones, said that if he admits to possessing but denies that he intended to distribute them, then that evidence could come in for intent. But that was not the case here. What the government is seeking to prove is that his conduct had to be the same. He had to be here to distribute drugs. He had to be here to commensurate a drug transaction because he had done so in the past. And that violates the very core of Rule 404B, as we noted earlier.
Well, his position was he was there, but he didn't have anything to do with the drug transaction, right?
That's exactly his position, yes, sir.
Of course, Jefferson's testimony
is otherwise.
Completely to the contrary, obviously.
Yes, sir.
And said that he had been involved in this for quite some time.
Right. We believe, and we think 404B would follow us on this, that in this type of situation, Mr. Chavis must be given the opportunity to say that he was not guilty without having his prior conviction thrown in his face to say, yes, you are guilty, sir. You pled guilty to this in the past, and thus you must have been guilty on this occasion.
Now, on this business about this stuff that was found on him when he was arrested, of course, it would have been okay to have the evidence that he was arrested on this date, right?
Right.
But you just couldn't say at a scale, is that?
This court has noted that when evidence is admitted after the fact, when he's arrested after the fact, right. If evidence does not go to the very crime, in this situation, I think it was United States versus Betts, where they found drug paraphernalia as well, and they said this has to be admitted in Rule 404B.
Well, of course, the arrest was related to the crime, I suppose. It was 4 months later. So
he was arrested for the crime, but the evidence obtained from his arrest was not directly linked to his crime, and thus it should have been admitted under 404B, which it was under Judge Reinhart's ruling. And
they have alternative rulings there that have.
He said during pretrial that if he was going to admit this under Rule 404B, then he would instruct the jury, which he did. And we would posit that this evidence does not show, as this court has noted, that evidence obtained after the fact, after
It could have been admitted under some other theory than 404B, namely that it was related to the crime involved here.
Well, it was not related to the crime in the sense that this evidence, there was no scale found whenever he was convicted. I mean, there are always, anytime 404B, I mean, you can say that it's relevant. That's not the inquiry, is whether this evidence is relevant. It's whether or not it meets the standards of 404B.
This is an unusual situation. He was apprehended at the scene of the crime, and then they let him go, and they didn't arrest him for 4 months.
Right.
That doesn't usually happen in drug cases, but
It was an unusual situation. We're not sure exactly what the delay was, other than possibly they didn't have enough evidence on him and they were waiting for a long time. Additionally, this evidence's probative value is substantially outweighed by its prejudicial effect. The probative value is lessened by the fact that Mr. Chavis was just 20 years old when he committed this first crime. He pled guilty to it, and it happened almost 6 years previously. Furthermore, because the crux of the prosecution's case was based on the testimony of Mr. Jefferson, who was a three-time felon and who had been convicted 7 times for lying to the police, this evidence had a potentially damaging effect because it poisoned Mr. Chavis's character. It invited the jury to say that he committed the crime on one occasion and must commit it again. Furthermore, this evidence was not harmless. As has been noted in the briefs, this evidence was an integral part of the case. And furthermore, it was emphasized that the last witness for the government was Detective Welsh, whose sole purpose was to get in front of the jury and tell them that Mr. Chavis had been convicted of this crime in the past, and in our argument that he should be convicted of in the future. If there are no questions, I see I've run into my rebuttal time.
Okay. Ms. Perry.
Good morning, Your Honors. April Perry on behalf of the United States. First of all, I want to start by discussing the admission of evidence in this case, all of which was properly admitted by the rules of evidence 401, 402, 403, and 404B, specifically with regards to the defendant's 1997 conviction. This case is not the same as United States versus Jones. Furthermore, Jones...
You know, this is an issue that's bounced around this circuit for 20 years, I think, this issue of 404 evidence, and I think there are cases all over the map on the subject. But isn't the basic principle that you have to have an issue as for which you are introducing the evidence. Here you say it's intent, but there isn't any issue of intent. Mr. Chavis just says, well, I was at the scene, but I didn't have anything to do with it. But I don't see where intent is involved and why you could introduce this evidence to show intent or knowledge or any of these other things. Unless they're in issue, I don't see on what basis you put this kind of stuff in.
Your Honor, this evidence
That's
does
a pretty
go
simple
in.
Principle, but I don't see where it's... It has to be very complicated, but it isn't applied very rationally here, I don't think.
Your Honor, there's two sides of the coin to intent. The first of all is specific intent, which is what the judge said he was admitting this under.
And specific intent is an element of the crime. We all know that. But why is it an issue here? It's not. He's not saying I was there, I had sold drugs, but I didn't intend to sell them or something of that sort.
What he is saying, though, is he possessed drugs and they were in his car, but that was mere happenstance, that he had no idea that it was an accident or somehow just very unfortunate for him that Jefferson threw drugs in his direction, forcing him then to throw the drugs back. That does go to his intent to both possess and possess with intent to distribute the crack cocaine.
Well, it goes to whether he committed the crime, but I'm not sure I understand why it goes to his intent.
Well, in this case, he said that he did not intend those drugs to be in his car, whereas Jefferson had said the exact opposite, that he had called the defendant and asked for him to bring him drugs. The defendant then arrived carrying the drugs with him, and those were handed over to Jefferson. According to the defendant, when he was arrested, Jefferson showed up with the drugs. Jefferson then somehow, for whatever reason, tried to give those drugs to the defendant, and the defendant said, no, 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 this is not something that I want to be involved with. For those reasons, intent is directly at issue in this case, because the defendant said that although the evidence was in his car, it had absolutely nothing to do with him, and he never intended it to be so. He just intended to let Jefferson into the car.
Well, doesn't the previous conviction just show that he knew how to sell drugs, he'd done it before, and therefore if he did it this time he had a propensity to do it and he was probably guilty, isn't it?
It's
propensity is the whole thing, I think.
No, Your Honor, it's not to show propensity, because in this case the defendant made this directly an issue of the case by saying, I had no idea that something like this could occur. I was just a very unlucky person when I was in that car. For that reason, this prior conviction for dealing distribution levels of crack cocaine is relevant, and a long line of Seventh Circuit cases do show that when you have prior crimes involving distribution levels of the same drug with which you are currently charged, those convictions can be admitted for the purpose of showing intent. And the jury was instructed to consider it only on that limited purpose and not to consider it for the purposes of propensity.
The defendant didn't testify this claim that he didn't know the drugs were there, didn't have anything to do with the drugs that were found in the car that he was in, came in by way of a statement he gave to the police, I assume?
Correct. After the defendant was arrested, when the police asked what was basically a bait question, if your fingerprints are on the drugs, why would that be? The defendant responded, oh, well, I guess they could be on the drugs, even though I had no idea, because, of course, they were given to me, I held them, and then threw them back. So the defendant did admit post-arrest that he had possessed the drugs, if only briefly, but he said that it was unknowing.
To what extent can this prior crime evidence be used to authenticate Jefferson's testimony? Not just the encounter in the car, but the fact that there was an ongoing relationship in selling drugs.
Well, the evidence regarding Jefferson and defendant's past drug transactions was very important to corroborate Jefferson's testimony, if for no other reason than to give it some kind of context, because the jury needed to understand that these men did have a long-standing relationship, that trust had developed between the two men, and that they had certain code words, certain arrangements, and
that
the
transactions... I understand that testimony and why that probably was pretty impacting, but would that in some way tie in also to the introduction of the prior conviction?
Well, we don't have any evidence that this prior conviction was a...
I'm sorry, but for the reasons that it is allowed to be, for intent and whatever Jones says, so why a particular prior conviction tends to show the more forward-looking fact of purpose, design, or volition to commit the new crime. Does that tie into to Jefferson's testimony? I'm asking. I don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer either, Your Honor. Certainly it would be a much stronger case if Jefferson had been involved in that prior conviction. There's no evidence on the record.
It would be independent of that. That's what I'm wondering, if that's something that is a valid reason to bring it in.
It certainly could be. I don't think that's been decided in any way yet. With regards to the evidence that was found on defendant at the time of his arrest, the government further contends that that was also properly admitted under Rule 404B. The evidence was a scale, a cellular phone, and large amounts of cash. With respect to the cash, the defendant had asserted defense through his girlfriend at trial, Sidra Moses, that it was purely an accident, again, that he was very unlucky that the cash happened to be on his person at that time, and that he was just transporting the $4,000 for her. When 5 months later, he was once again found to be in possession of large amounts of cash, that goes to rebut his claim to the contrary. Because all of this evidence was properly admitted, we don't believe the court needs to reach the consideration of harmless error, but if the court does, we feel that the evidence in this case was absolutely overwhelming. The defendant was found at the scene of a drug crime with more than 50 grams of crack cocaine in his car and more than $4,000 in his pocket. When he was arrested, he yelled out to Jefferson, "You set me up." When he was brought to the police station, he yelled out, "Don't tell them anything. They've got nothing on us." Jefferson testified at trial that he had called the defendant and had asked the defendant to come to the parking lot of the Park and Save specifically to engage in a drug transaction. Defendant admitted at the time of his arrest that he was there in the parking lot to meet Jefferson. Furthermore, the defendant had in his possession on the day of his first arrest, the November 22nd date, he had 16 of the 19 bills in buy money that had been used on the previous day's controlled buy. So although he did not have possession of the crack cocaine on his person, it was in his car, and he had money from the previous controlled buy actually in his pockets. For these reasons, the government respectfully requests that you affirm the defendant's conviction. As the appellant stated, we believe that a Palladino remand for sentencing is appropriate in this case, and therefore we would ask for a limited remand specifically for sentencing. If there are no further questions, I'll rest on the briefs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Merrill?
Now, there's a couple quick things. First of all, the district court, when admitting this evidence, basically said this evidence can come in because he's charged with a specific intent crime. That was clearly not the case under Jones, and thus it should not have been admitted for that reason. Furthermore, there must be a link, as Jones noted, between the prior crime and what the defendant is currently being charged with. And you must look back and say, what is it that we are trying to prove? In this situation, what the government is trying to prove, what they presented to the jury, was that Mr. Chavis was a drug dealer, and thus he must have done it on this occasion that violates the very core of Rule 404B. Second of all, there was not overwhelming evidence of his guilt, which is evidenced by the fact that they found him not guilty of one of the charges. And furthermore, the prosecution's own statement goes to exactly why they wanted this evidence in. And in closing, they said they referred specifically to the 1997 conviction, consider this whether this was a mistake. In other words, consider this whether he truly was innocent. Furthermore, on the 2003 arrest, they said people who carry this type of evidence are drug dealers. There is no other explanation for it. But as in Jones, this looks, walks, and talks like the argument, once a drug dealer, always a drug dealer, which is what their case was. Mr. Chavis is going to be in jail for another 30 years, and it's upon us to make sure that he's not going to be in prison for a crime he committed when he was just 20 years old. And we respectfully submit that this court overturn his objections and overturn his sentence and give him a new trial. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. This case will be taken under advisement. Thanks to Marilyn, to your associates for presenting this case and doing a fine argument for your client.